Hello and welcome back to the Life on the Wrist podcast. Today is going to be a mega episode when it comes to Watches and Wonders. We're going to be discussing some of the releases from Watches and Wonders and some of the pieces that were released sort of around the same time from many different brands, the ones that kind of stood out to me and had some really nice examples. I'll leave links in the show notes or the description of this podcast to each of the pieces and maybe some articles about them. If you want to check them out, I encourage you to do so. It'll give you some good information about each of the releases and an in-depth look at each of them. I want to give a big shout out to Hodinkee and Revolution Watch, who are, I think, two platforms that really did a really nice job covering the Watches and Wonders trade show. I think some of the articles that they wrote, as well as some of the video coverage that they had, was really great. I also think if you do not know of the Hodinkee podcast, I highly encourage you to check it out. They actually had a podcast after every day of the show, which was really nice to kind of discuss some of the pieces that they had seen on that specific day. And they gave their thoughts about, the general show as a trade show. I think at a high level, I'll start off just with the idea that I think this Watches and Wonders was a little bit quieter than maybe some of the previous couple of years have been. I think most brands maybe were just taking a breath, exhaling a little bit after some of the craziness that the last couple of years have been. Many are saying that it seems as if sort of the watch world is back to normal in some regards, where prices are a little bit more reasonable. Individuals who maybe weren't so invested in the watch world have kind of been sifted out, and those who kind of got into it over the last couple of years and really gained a big passion for it have kind of stayed, and I think brands have sort of taken that breath with us as a community. At a high level, I really don't think there was anything too crazy at Watches and Wonders, at least from my perspective. It seems like most brands sort of iterated off of things that they were doing. There are a couple brands that I think did some really interesting things, one of them being Bulgari, the other being IWC, and the last one I will mention is Vacheron Constantin. But we'll get into the releases of each of them, and I think they really, for me, were the standouts at this year's Watches and Wonders. So I think everyone kind of took a breath. I did hear on the Hodinkee podcast that I think from a lot of brands are saying that next year might be a very lively year for many of them, and it'll be exciting to see what happens in a year and also kind of where the industry will go over the next 12 months. I wanted to start off just with a release that is from my favorite brand at BNF. They released the raffle for the new edition of the Mad One. This one is nicknamed the Time to Love. And so this is, if you don't know, basically Maximilian Bucer decided to finally release sort of a side project, which was creating a more accessible timepiece under a different label called Mad Editions. But it had that sort of crazy MBNF touch to it, which was the Mad One. They've released a couple of versions of these pieces, and the most recent one, as I said, is nicknamed Time to Love. It combines the colors of blue, red, and green, or excuse me, blue, red, and yellow. But what's really important is that this piece was created with legendary French designer Jean-Charles de Castelbajac, who has sort of infused the Mad One with his unmistakable style. If you don't know who Jean-Charles de Castelbajac is, he is a French artist and designer that in the 1980s, Maximilian Bucer, the founder of MBNF, really fell in love with his sort of avant-garde pop design and use of primary colors. And so throughout his sort of history, or throughout his life, he kind of always had an eye on what Jean-Charles de Castelbajac was doing. What was really cool is he said back in, I think, 2021, he sent a message and said, hey, you know, if you ever want to collaborate, please, Max sent a a message to Jean-Charles saying, you know, would you want to collaborate, and you know, how much respect he and admiration he has for him. And what's really cool is they were able to create a Mad Edition where Jean-Charles basically took his own spin on what the Mad One would be, with many of the design elements that that he typically has in his pieces. The watch is a really nice example with three iconic colors: red for passion, blue for hope, and yellow for human warmth. And it has, and those are on the rotor that spins on the top of the Mad One. They're also in the shape of angel wings, which is the sort of signature of Custom by Jacques. There's also some green that's present in this watch in the hour discs on the below the rotor, which is, in Custom by Jacques' words, sort of linked to childhood memories. There's also some really nice writing, and on the strap it says, "Time to love." So quite a cool version of this piece. What's really interesting is this is going to be limited to 999 pieces. The way that the process works for this piece is that it's going to be through the raffle system. So you enter the raffle and you will end up being picked. When this podcast is going to be released, which is the 16th of April, you'll have one more day to register if you haven't already. So the raffle is running from April 3rd to April 17th. So if you are listening to this podcast, be sure to enter the raffle if you're interested in having the opportunity to own one of these pieces. I think it's a really nice, you know, the Mad Ones are a really great way of, in my opinion, a great way of allowing those who are interested in MBNF to have access to the pieces that perhaps are out of reach from a monetary perspective. So a really cool way to sort of participate with MBNF. All right, so moving into Watches and Wonders. As I mentioned, there are many pieces that were released. Some stood out more than others. I think from at a high level, I think most companies sort of iterated on what they had and sort of looked at product line expansion expansion instead of development. One of the pieces that I think really stood out was from Bulgari, who set a new record for the world's thinnest watch with a new Octofinissimo Ultra. The watch measures half a millimeter. The watch measures 1.7 millimeters in diameter, beating the Richard Mille that was released about, I think, something like 4 months ago or so, which basically took the place of the Bulgari Octofinissimo away from that first place spot, and it actually ended up doing it by 0.05 millimeters. So 1.7 millimeters in diameter, a world record-setting piece, and also it is a cost-certified Ultra, which adds an entirely new layer of watchmaking to it. The piece is really incredible, extremely thin. There's a picture on the article in the show notes where it compares the 2017 version of the Octofinissimo automatic with the 2024 version, and when you see the difference in thickness, it truly is incredible. I think another piece of this is also the idea that the bracelet had to be of similar thickness, or otherwise it wouldn't really wear super well. And so I think there was also a lot of engineering that went into creating a bracelet that would work with this piece. The watch is limited to 20 pieces, and the pricing is $529,000. So expensive piece, but a really cool kind of record-setting piece for Bulgari. And again, just pushing the boundaries of what watchmaking can be. Continuing the conversation on ultra-thin pieces, Piaget released their Altiplano Concept Tourbillon, which is the world's thinnest tourbillon. The Altiplano has held thinnest records in the past, they held the previous record for the thinnest tourbillon, which was released in 2018 at 2 millimeters thin, and this piece is truly work of art to be able to be able to have a piece that that is so exceptionally thin, I really is I encourage you to take a look at the pictures of this piece, because it's really quite incredible. Because when you think of a tourbillon, a lot of the times you think of what's one of those tourbillons sitting in like an AP Royal Oak, or maybe the Vacheron Constant tourbillons, which are, they look a lot thicker. And so when you see a video of this piece that when you see a piece of this when you see this piece actually moving, it's truly incredible. The new Octofinispoon is 1.7 millimeters thin, so 0.3 millimeters difference compared to their previous record that they set in 2018. So thinness is definitely something that brands continue to compete on, and I think the Piaget is a really nice example of that. Cartier had a really great Watches and Wonders. I think they released some really nice examples of the Tank American, and the they have these really beautiful sort of mini tanks that really caught a lot of people's attention. I think one of the most significant pieces that they released was the Tortue, which is a mono-pusher chronograph in a K-shape that I think is quite romantic, and it historically points to the Tortue that was introduced in 1912. And they released a version in yellow gold, and I think a version in platinum. So two really nice examples. I think it harkens back to a really great model that Cartier released, and there's a version, the Cartier, they've added this shape back to their Privé lineup as a chronograph and a time only limited edition pieces. So as I mentioned, the chronograph comes in yellow gold and in platinum, and I think the time only pieces are the time-only piece is released in platinum with yellow gold. There's a platinum and a yellow gold time-only piece, and then there's also a diamond set platinum version of the Tortue time-only piece. So there's that sort of additional layer to it. They'll be available in September. The time-only will be available in September, and then the chronograph in October. There will be 200 numbered pieces of each metal for the time-only and the chronograph. The platinum and the diamond set is the platinum diamond set versions are limited to 50 pieces. Again, this wasn't incredibly sort of innovative or something completely new, but I do think that they brought back a model that it warrants some attention. Patek Philippe is a brand that everyone likes to talk about. I think the biggest thing with Patek Philippe this year was the fact that they released a couple of watches with this denim-looking strap. What's interesting about the straps are they actually are, I believe they are calf, but they are made to look like it is denim. There was a lot of talk about this on Instagram, whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. Some people looked at the 5330G World Time, with a local date indicator with that sort of denim strap, and said, you know, I think it can work because you are looking at something a little bit more dressy. But then others looked at the very interesting Patek Philippe 5980 in white gold with this denim looking strap and said, interesting that a sports watch would have this. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is what you're looking at is a white gold Nautilus chronograph. So, you know, I don't know. it's an interesting combination, for sure. I think it's a different take on what a strap could be, and I think, you know, I think what's interesting is as watch enthusiasts, we do like to switch out straps and give our watches different looks, and I think some people have made that comment to say, you know, you probably end up doing this in some way, shape, or form. It might not be the first thing that you that you do, but to give your watch a little bit of a look, you might experiment with the straps that you have on the watch. So I think first off, the 5980 is really nice in white gold, for the specific reference. I also think that the 5330G with the local date is a really cool movement, and they're very, very beautiful pieces. Hit or miss on the straps, but doesn't mean that you can't replace it. I think that's something that's completely viable if you are interested in doing that. My personal favorite from the lineup that they released was the 5236P, which is their inline perpetual calendar. They released this, I want to say back in 2021, which sort of harkened back to the P1 1450 pocket watch, which was an inline perpetual pocket watch that Patek Philippe produced. And they released the 5236P, which in 2021 with a blue dial of this inline perpetual. This time they've released it with a salmon dial, which is obviously a very in-demand dial color with Patek Philippe collectors and just collectors in general. So I do think this is a nice iteration off of the 5236P. But I think this is a really great example of the idea that, you know, the 5236P was something that they had released before. And what they're really just doing is expanding that line with a different dial color. And so they're basically catering to those who maybe collect this type of piece or are looking for this inline perpetual, giving them a different option of dial color here. But for me, probably my favorite Patek Philippe release of the show. So moving on from Patek Philippe, we'll go to Jaeger LeCoultre, who released the Duomètre Chronograph Moon, which is, they basically combined a chronograph and moon phase with two independent gear trains, and produced a really exceptional piece. I saw this piece first actually on Instagram, and I thought it looked incredibly beautiful. It's very, very complicated, obviously. JLC basically updated their Duomètre with a trio of new watches, headlined by the Duomètre Chronograph Moon, which is in a platinum watch with a copper dial or a rose gold dial. It's a platinum with a copper dial or a rose gold version with a silver opaline dial. And it basically builds off of the Duomètre that had with a new JLC caliber 391 that powers a chronograph moon phase, day-night indicator, and a 1/6 second counter. They also added two watches to their line, the Quantième Lunaire and the Helioturbion Perpetual. So, as I mentioned, the Duomètre Chrono Moon iterates off of the Duomètre and has a monopusher chronograph that's combined with a moon phase and day-night complications. It also has two power reserve indicators and a flying seconds display. What's really innovative about this piece is that there are two separate barrels and independent mainsprings that drive the timekeeping and the complications, but they're integrated into a single caliber and escapement. And so this is obviously quite innovative for this piece. The watch, the Duomètre Moon, is 86,000 in platinum and 70,000 in pink gold. So fairly expensive, but you are getting some pretty cool innovation from JLC. With the Quantième Lunaire, it uses the same caliber 381 movement that we've seen in previous versions of this watch, but it's in a new steel case. And then the last piece is the Duomètre Helio Tourbillon Perpetual Calendar, and basically takes the original idea behind the Gyro Tourbillon, which essentially compensates for the effect of gravity at every position, and it's fitted with a cylindrical hairspring and has a titanium cage that rotates on three axes to do that. So this was the one that I saw on Instagram first, and then obviously clicked into the into JLC's Instagram to see what's more. But I do think that these are pretty cool complications and a pretty interesting iteration off of what they've had in the past. Again, sort of expansion as opposed to a new line creation. Tug Heuer had had an interesting Watches and Wonders. I think the first thing was the release of the new Monaco split-second chronograph, which essentially took the Monaco case, created a split-second chronograph, and in some ways sort of redesigned the case design of the Monaco. The sort of traditional square shape that you see in some of the modern pieces. I do think that this split-second is a pretty interesting version of it. You have a kind of fully skeletonized dial, and red and gray rattrapant hands for the chronograph. I do believe this piece is on the rather expensive side, so I don't know if you're going to be seeing this watch on many individuals' wrists. But the Monaco, I think it's further developing the Monaco, redesigning the case in some ways. And giving them a whole different look. I think the price is 165,000 Swiss francs, so on the expensive size, and it's a numbered edition, so it's going to be limited in production. The other watch that they released was the Tag Heuer Carrera Skipper, but this time in gold. So if you don't know, the Skipper was a yacht timing complication that they had added to a Carrera. There were vintage versions of the Skipper, the Heuer Skippers, that they iterated off of. It was released, I believe, in steel, and now it's going to be in rose gold. So again, a different version of this piece, but further line expansion. I am a huge fan of blue dials. As you know, my first vintage watch was a Mémoiselle yacht timer, so this complication, blue dials, all of it really sticks with me. I like the rose gold and the blue. I think it looks fairly nice. I've seen better combinations of sort of a gold tone with a blue dial. I think I personally prefer yellow gold with a blue dial, but the rose gold is a nice example and a cool iteration off of something that they have available. All right, so moving forward, and I apologize for moving this. I just don't want to go on for 2 hours with you. The next piece I want to talk about was from IWC, which is the Portuguese Eternal Calendar, which is IWC's first secular perpetual calendar with the most accurate moon phase ever. So, if you don't know, the Portuguese. Portuguese is a very iconic piece from IWC, and the perpetual calendar they produce in the Portuguese case is also, I think, one of the most well-respected perpetual calendars out there. I think it fits in many different environments, both in a sporty environment, but also in a more formal environment. Perpetual calendars are really cool because they have leap year indicators, and so it allows you to pass through leap years without having to reset your watch. And so it's really trying to have the most accurate perpetual calendar, accurate display of the calendar on your wrist. What's really cool is what they've done is they've sort of redesigned this, they've really designed a caliber that will adjust for the skipped leap years at the start of each century. So if you don't know, every 100 years there is a leap year, but we actually skip it. And so there for that sort of section of or for that 4-year time period, every year skips that sort of skips that leap year. And so what they did was they designed a caliber that would adjust for that. And so it will adjust for that skip leap year each year at the start of the century until 2400. And so what happens is this watch is now going to essentially be, it's essentially an eternal calendar that's going to be accurate until 3999, and it could be even longer. But that's 3999 is the basically end of the calendar that we've designed. What's quite incredible about that, that's one of the things that I think is really incredible about this piece. The other thing is that they broke the record for having the most accurate moon phase, which is as accurate for the next 45 million years. And so they've really redesigned this caliber to be one of the most accurate perpetual calendars for the rest of time. And I think this is this for me is like true innovation. This is taking problems that you may have in watchmaking with watch accuracy and basically turning the dial up to 1,000. And so they've done all of this in a 44 millimeter platinum cased Portuguese with a glass dial with white lacquer. A very beautiful piece, and a nice step forward, I think, in what you can do. Now, I think at the end of the day, it's helpful to preface this with the fact that, okay, when are you actually going to need an internal perpetual calendar? Well, if you want to think of watchmaking in the long term, this is pretty significant. It really allows this watch to be used until the end of time. But, you know, our phones will do the same. I'm sure whatever we have in the next 100 years that equates to telling time like our phone does, we'll probably do the same thing. But again, this is just watchmaking for, this is creating something that can last well beyond us. And I think that's what watches are quite a lot. So the next piece I wanted to talk about was the datagraph released by Lange, which was in 1999. Was when they launched the datagraph, and it was their first chronograph model. And so for Watches and Wonders 2024, they celebrated the 25th birthday of the datagraph and announced a limited edition model with a blue dial in a white case. It's only going to be produced in 125 pieces, and has a power reserve indicator and is a really nice example of this piece. The case metal is in white gold. It's 41 millimeters with a blue dial. A nice anniversary piece. Blue dials, I think, are fairly rare when it comes to Lange pieces, so it's using something that's fairly rare for them in a nice anniversary model. All right, so I'll talk about Rolex next, and then I will get into Vacheron Constantin, who I think released, in my opinion, one of the coolest watches for the year. Rolex really didn't do anything too crazy this year. They did come out with a 1908 with a guilloche dial, I think with a platinum case. It's a guilloche blue dial. It's in a platinum case. They also came out with a full gold deep sea, with a blue dial and blue bezel insert, and then had some versions of like a gem set Daytona, some iterations off of the day dates, and but I think the 1908 and the Deep Sea were really the two standouts from them. But again, nothing too crazy. There also was there was information that came out that they released a yellow gold Le Mans Daytona chronograph, which I think was fairly significant. So I think the yellow gold Le Mans was quite significant because they discontinued the white gold version of that piece. So those have probably skyrocketed in value. I think the Deep Sea is quite cool. It's extremely heavy. It's completely solid, solid gold. They've also sort of renamed they've changed the way in which they sort of present the Sea Dweller name on the dial. So the Sea Dweller was normally said Sea Dweller on the dial, but this time instead of saying Sea Dweller, it just says Deep Sea, which I think is a significant significant change. It's very heavy. I think it's 44 millimeters, huge yellow gold blue dial. I think it was something like 390 grams. I might be wrong about that, but it was very, 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 very heavy. But I think one of the more significant changes, and then the 1908, which I think is a pretty classy change from them. The blue is sort of a light blue with a really nice guilloche pattern on it, and sort of what looks like to me sort of like a hobnail bezel, but it's probably more like a fluted bezel. Again, I think Rolex is a perfect representation of what Watches and Wonders this year has been, which has been we're going to just iterate off of what we have and not release anything too crazy. Except I think the Le Mans Daytona was pretty significant. All right, so we'll end off with Vacheron Constantin. They released a few quite interesting pieces. It was the Patrimony's 20th anniversary, and so they released a lineup of these pieces. They released the Patrimony Manual Wind in a 39 millimeter case, but they also released a couple of versions of the Patrimony, like with a moon phase with a retrograde date, that I think is quite quite impressive and quite good looking. They also released the Traditionnel Tourbillon chronograph with a really, really cool sort of dial color to it, limited to 50 pieces. Green was a big color this year, so they released four overseas using the screen dial, one of them being the self-winding reference 4520 with the hours, minutes, seconds, and date complication. They also released the 4605, which has the same complications. They released an overseas chronograph with a green dial, which is quite nice. They released an overseas dual time, which was quite nice. So they've definitely sort of expanded that line. They also released a titanium version of the overseas tourbillon with a blue dial, which again kind of an expansion on the existing lineup of watches. I think the most significant piece that they released, though, was indeed a pocket watch. This is it's called the Berkley Grand Complication Pocket Watch, which basically surpassed its predecessor, the Tivoli Reference 57260, which debuted in 2015 with 57 complications. What's interesting is that piece, as well as the Berkley Grand Complication, were both commissioned by the same American patron, and this watch has a Chinese perpetual calendar, along, you know, that's just sort of one of the many complications that this piece comes with, or I guess comes in. It has 63 complications and becomes the most complicated watch in the world. It's extremely heavy, 960 grams, which is pretty crazy, 2,877 components. And what was really interesting is the amount of time that it took to commission this piece. It's a white gold piece. It the amount of time it took them to create this piece, they were already in development of the previous record. The previous record setting watch was the 57260, with the 57 complications. They were essentially being developed at the same time, which I think is quite an interesting sort of feat for Vacheron Constantin to be part of. And personally, I think it shows what Vacheron Constantin is all about, what they're capable of doing. I think stands them apart compared to many other brands. So for me, my favorite piece from this from Watches and Wonders was indeed this pocket watch. I have had a little bit of a bias towards pocket watches in recent months, but I do think that this is a very significant piece. All right, so I know I only covered, you know, a very small portion of all the things that were released over the last week. So I apologize if I missed something that you wanted me to talk about, but that doesn't mean that the conversation stops here. If you want to talk about any of the releases, you can send us a message on lifeonthewrist.com, or you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or X. We'd love to chat about some of the releases. I am looking forward to, though, Instagram kind of getting back to normal. I think over the last week, it's just been Watches and Wonders nonstop. So I'm excited to kind of get back to the normal feed that we have on Instagram. As I mentioned, there will be links to all of the articles, all of the watches that we talk about during this podcast. So be sure to check out the show notes if you want to see any of the watches that we discussed. If you are new to Life on the Wrist, be sure to follow this podcast. That way you are notified when we upload our podcasts weekly. And if you are new to Life, and if you are new and you wouldn't mind sharing this podcast with a friend, it really does help out the podcast and helps us sort of grow and get to more individuals who might be interested in watches. If you are feeling generous and wouldn't mind rating this podcast, it really does help me out. With that said, guys, thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and until next time.